Hey, everybody. Welcome back to So You Want to Be in Ministry. We are so glad to have you. I am Tim, and we've got a really cool episode for you today. But first, I want to remind you that we are all about educating you if you're thinking about jumping into ministry, equipping you if you're already in, encouraging you if you're in a rough season and thinking about jumping out. And we also want to empower you if you are not a pastor, not in ministry, you don't really have a desire to be into it. We want to empower you to follow godly leaders well. And so I hope to introduce you to another one today. His name is Jake Rosecoff. He is a campus pastor for Vox Church. I hope I said that right. He'll correct me. If it's not Vox, it's Vox, but V-O-X, Vox Church. He recently got this position. He was doing discipleship for him beforehand. He's an incredibly great guy. I went to college with him, played college basketball with him. We have a lot of fun together, and I think it's going to come through in this interview. So let's jump into this interview and check out Jake Rosecoff. Well, hey, Jake, welcome to the podcast today. So glad to have you on here, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So how I know you is we got to go to college together. Your brother was in my class. You were younger. And then we got to do a lot of traveling together with the basketball team in college.
Yes, we did.
I always felt like, because there were five in my class on the team. Yeah. And you could only put four in a room when we had to stay in hotel rooms. And I always got shifted down to you guys with the younger classmen. I was like, whatever.
But yeah. No, my fondest memories with you are in hotel rooms. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, we would walk into the hotel room and instantly grab another one of our teammates and shove him in that small space between the bed and the wall and just die laughing. So that's like my fondest memory.
We would do that. Do you remember the time that, like, we told somebody that they were going to have to slip on like the windowsill bed? There was like a little time where we were like, you get to sleep up there tonight.
Oh my goodness.
There was so many things that we did. Oh, I know. It was pretty crazy. But anyway, now you're a campus pastor at a multi-site church, which is really cool. Vox Church, which you've told me a lot about. It sounds like amazing things are happening there. But tell me a little bit of the story. Like, give us the highlight, the bullet points of how you got to this place in ministry.
Yeah. So my family and I are from Iowa. We've lived in Iowa most of my life. And so served in Iowa as a youth pastor for just about 15 years. And 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago, actually now, we were just going through some stuff at our current church. There was some change in leadership. And so with some of the things we were going through, some of the stuff that we were walking through as a family, COVID had happened, like all this was going crazy. And so God said, this is the time I want you to move. And so we were like, of course, like, what in the world? Like, are you sure this is the time? But we knew that God was asking us to leave. My time there had ended. And so we started to look on the East Coast because my wife's family is from Connecticut. And so we had always had a desire to come out and be near them. So as I started looking for some positions, I found a couple different churches, applied at a couple different churches. I actually got a job with a church in New Hampshire. And right when COVID happened, they called me and said something like, yeah, we can't bring you out now because of COVID and because there's a spending freeze. And I said, okay, but I still feel called to come out there. And so I picked up my family and we moved to Connecticut. We moved in with my sister-in-law and her family. And so there was like 10 of us in a small house. I had no job, I had no house, but I knew God wanted us to be here. And so I told that other church I was going to continue to look for employment, and they said that was fine. And so I ended up finding a position at Vox, and it was for community group, which is small group ministry, and being the director of small groups. And I had never done that before. I knew nothing about small groups other than that they were great. And so I applied for it and interviewed and ended up getting the job. And so my job became community group director over all of our campuses. So we have 11 campuses. And so my job was to make sure that they were resourced for community groups. And so that was a big change for us, but that's what got me into Vox Church. About 2 years later, so this past September, I said yes to the call to become a campus pastor at our Branford Connecticut location. And so that's the current position I'm in now, and am learning and growing in that position and having the time of my life. So that's just a little bit of how, that's the very, very, very short version of how we got to where we are today. But just super grateful to be at Vox. You know, love this church, love this ministry, love the passion that they have to reach New England with the gospel. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, just so grateful that even in the midst of some difficulty, in the midst of transition, God brought us to right where he wanted us to be, and we couldn't be happier. So couldn't be more fulfilled. So it's just super grateful.
Yeah. And I've seen that through your social media and stuff. Like it's obvious. Like I think anybody that is social media friends or following different individuals or pastors out there, people in ministry, it's really easy to see if they're enjoying it or if they might be struggling. You can just kind of feel it through any posts that they give. And it's really obvious that you are loving it. Actually, I remember when you posted that you guys were moving out there when the world was going nuts. And and I was just like, why would they go there? And my wife was like, that's where Lauren's from. Like, that's where she's. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they say that New England is the most spiritually dead place in America. And so, you know, why does anyone come out here to do ministry? Well, our lead pastor, that's kind of his vision. He grew up in New England. He grew up in New Haven, Connecticut, and just, you know, had a passion to reach this area. And so the story of how Vox started is pretty interesting. You can go online to our website and check it out. But it's amazing what God has done over these last, started in 2011, so it's been 13 years, and it's just been incredible. So I got to come in year nine, because they just were about to celebrate their 10-year anniversary, and just to become a part of a multi-site church, which I had never been a part of something like that before, has been a learning curve, but also to be on a staff of about 100 people has been incredible. Yeah. It's been crazy. It's been awesome. And just couldn't be happier. So I'm glad that you noticed that in my Facebook posts.
Yeah, that's good. Well, so my wife and I just went on vacation there maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And we had never been to New England. We knew very little about it. She did a little research, and I could tell you, it may be the most spiritually dead place. It is the most life-giving place. Mm-hmm. One of the most life-giving places I've ever visited in my life. Like, it was just, we came home so refreshed. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, we got off the air, like out of the airplane, went into whatever airport it was in Maine. It was a small little airport. Yeah. And we walk out, and it felt like you walked into the neighborhood. Like it felt like very much woodsy, and we walked into a suburb, and I'm like, is this an airport or like the driveway? Like, it was very interesting, but it was so life-giving.
No. Coming from Iowa is so wide open, right? It's just, like my two oldest sons went back to Iowa for his friend's graduation. And when they came back home to Connecticut, we were like, how was it? And the first thing they said was, there's so much space. It's so open. Connecticut is obviously very crammed. There's actually the same amount of people in Connecticut than there is in Iowa. Same number.
Wow.
And yet the circumference is like a fourth of Iowa.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people, but also you're right. Like there's nothing really wide open. It's all woodsy and mountains and ocean and, you know, crazy awesome national parks. And so it's been incredible. That side of living here has been incredible for sure.
Absolutely. Well, give us a couple insights. So you've been in ministry for what, like over 15 years now?
I started in 2006, so I'm in my 18th
18th
year.
Yes. Actually, you're approaching
October
20.
Will be my 18th year. Yeah,
approaching 20 because you're old. What can you give us one or two insights maybe that you wish you would have known before you jumped in? So we always talk about that our vision is to equip people that are already in ministry, encourage people that might not be in, but also why am I losing my first one? Educate. There we go. Educate people thinking about jumping in. And so I want to try to educate them. Maybe these are a couple of things that you're thinking about jumping in, you need to consider. What are some of the insights that you wish you maybe should have known or would have liked to have known before you jumped into ministry?
Yeah. One of the things that stands out big time is reading. So coming out of college, of course, they had us read a bunch of books. At that time, I'm not sure I cared as much about that kind of reading, but since I've come to Vox, so it was February of 2021. So I'm approaching my 4-year anniversary. Is that right? Yeah, 4-year anniversary. They gave me 3 books to read in the first 3 months. And it wasn't, they weren't asking. They were telling, you're going to read these 3 books in the first 3 months. I hadn't read 3 books in 3 years. Like reading was never anything that was taught to me, told to me. And I never came to that realization on my own how important it was. And so what I've learned is you have to keep growing as a pastor. You're never going to reach perfection. You're never going to reach understanding all the different philosophies or all the different methods of ministry or all the different experiences other people have gone through. You have to continue to grow if you want to be effective. And I've learned that now. And so I think I have a note on my phone. I think I'm on book 10 already this year. So halfway through. And it's that there's no patting on the shoulder at all there. It's just, gosh, I've grown so much. I've grown more in the last 4 years here than I did in the first 15 years of ministry. And so just super grateful to be in a church that's making me read and challenging me to read. And everybody here does. And so I would say, I wish somebody had said something and pulled me aside as a young pastor and said, it's really important that you read a lot and read some really good books. And that's the first thing. The second thing I would say would be developing leaders is vital for the health and the future of your ministry. And so calling out people who you see God's gifting in them is huge. You know, equipping them through giving them your time, bringing them along with you, sitting down and going through books together, which is something that I've been doing here lately. And it's just been so rewarding. So investing time with people, but like giving them an opportunity to then use their gifts and abilities. So that's something that I've been doing a lot in these first 9 or 10 months of my time here as a campus pastor. There's one specific group that I'm in. We call it a leader's circle. So I selected 11 guys that I thought had leadership potential, and we've been going through books together. We're going to start again. We're taking a 2-month break here in the summer, going to pick up again in the fall with, actually I have it just sitting right here. So I'll just show you, Spiritual Leadership by J. Oswald Sanders. And so we're going to go through that together and just continue to invest in them, because Vox Church is going to continue to plant churches. And I'm in a church where our goal is to plant a church out of my church, although it's the Lord's. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Every 2 years. And so if that's true, then there has to be a campus pastor who is ready to lead the charge and lead that church. And so they're looking at me going, who are you investing in and who are you developing? And that's just a mindset that I never really had before. You know, I was never in multi-site churches. And so there's nothing wrong with single churches. It's just that it's easy when you're in a single church for the pastor or a couple of the pastors to do everything. That's a mistake, right? That leads to burnout. That leads to all kinds of problems. And it probably stunts the growth of the pastor who can invest some of his time in you know, developing as him, as a person, as a pastor. So investing in others is something too that I wished someone would have told me a long time ago. I think I did youth ministry a lot by myself. I always had youth leaders, but looking back, I don't know that I invested in them and utilized their gifts and abilities as much as I should have. So reading and developing leaders are the two things I would say.
What were the 3 books that they gave you? I'm curious.
Crazy Love.
Okay.
Seven Habits. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
And then they knew my background of being a Baptist. Mm-hmm. And so they made me read, I can't remember. I don't have it on my shelf.
That's fine. I was just curious. So they don't give these 3 to just everybody walking in. They specifically focused them on you.
So they give Crazy Love and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People to everyone. Okay. And then the 3rd book is typically a book based off of what you're being hired for.
That's cool.
So, and I did read right before I got hired at Vox. I knew I was going to be hired as a community group pastor. I read the book by Steve Gladden. It's called Small Groups with Purpose.
Okay.
And I fine tooth combed that one. So if you have a pastor or if you are yourself in small group ministry, that book was a game changer for me. Small Groups with Purpose by Steve Gladden. So those are some of the books I read early on as a new employee at Vox.
You know, I'm curious too. So you switch positions within the church. Did you have to mentally shift when that happened? Like, did you have to almost reprogram and go, okay, I'm not that anymore. I'm this other position. I got to do things a little bit differently. I got to navigate my week differently. Did any of that happen?
Not necessarily, because I had already been a part of our Brantford location since its launch. It launched in December of 2021. So I was at Vox. I started at Vox in February of 2021, going to our New Haven campus. But as soon as Brantford opened in 2021 of December, I went there. And so I had, and I, you know, started in September of 2023. And so I had already been there for almost 2 years with all those people. And so I was definitely, I was on staff at the church. So I was still helping out at the church a lot. And so for me to make that shift, it was, it's definitely different, but knowing a lot of the people already and knowing the system of how that specific campus was running and all that stuff, that actually really helped me out big time. If I had gone from what I was doing, youth ministry, straight into campus pastor ministry, there would have been a major learning curve.
That's what I did. So there you go.
So you understand it.
Yeah. We just had a moment where we were sharing different things within our, at our church. And that's one thing that I said was when I took this job, I didn't know if I was going to be good. I thought there's potential that I could just destroy this church. I don't know. And so it's panned out. Okay. So,
yeah, you know, we work under the grace of God. And so all things are gifted through him.
So does anything stick out to you that you didn't learn in Bible college since we went to Bible college together, but that you learned as you experienced? I know you shared some things that you wish you would have known, and so you got the reading and leadership development. But is there anything where you're just like, man, I didn't really learn that in a classroom setting?
Yeah, for sure. I actually had a chance. I'm not going to mention any names, but I had a chance to talk to somebody from the college. I don't remember if they had called me. I don't remember if it was a survey, but I got a chance to share some feedback about that exact question. And so
side note real quick, that says something about the college we came from too, that they're willing to reach out and do that. So,
yeah, yep, exactly. So I did say a lot of positive things because there was that side of it too. So I don't want you to think it was all negative, but I definitely think that we missed out on the practical side of ministry. That's, if you talk to people that graduated from there, that's probably one of the things you're going to hear, which is okay, because the Bible knowledge side is awesome. And I don't discredit that at all. But, you know, I had no idea as a youth pastor how to do a baptism, how to do a wedding, a funeral, a baby dedication, like none of that stuff. I had no idea how to like go into a business meeting and potentially run a business meeting. I had no idea how to invest in a leader. I had no idea about some of those practical things. And so I had a pastor when I started off in ministry who was pretty gracious and very helpful. And so I learned a lot from him, and we sat down and went through a lot of stuff together on because it was like, hey, do you want to do this baptism Sunday? You have a teenager who's being baptized. And I was just like, sure, I'll figure it out. So I kind of wished. And I think partly the reason for that is because I was in the youth ministry program at the college. And so I think the pastoral program, like the senior pastoral program, may have been, maybe not. Okay. I guess I assumed that all these years.
I'm going to answer that for you right now.
Okay. Well, either way, it sounds like we both kind of learned on the job.
Yeah.
Which is good and bad. It's good because then we didn't like fit into a small box of how to do those types of things. So there was a little bit more freedom and creativity. Bad because you got to start somewhere. So I would definitely say that the practical side. And I would say this too, if there's any pastors listening, if you have a youth pastor at your church who's a younger guy who hasn't been doing it a long time, he's worthy of your investment in these areas specifically. He's worthy of your investment overall, but like he's going to need some help going through these things because everyone knows you're hired to do youth ministry, but that's not all you do. You know, especially if you're in a smaller church, you do a lot. You do a lot of things. I mean, I've run the gamut. I've done everything. I've led music. I've led business meetings. My third church I was in, our pastor left and there was no other pastor. So I instantly started running business meetings, preaching every Sunday, trying to still do all my youth ministry stuff. You just trial by fire. You just do it and God gives you the grace. But I think for senior pastors or older guys to mentor or to, you know, spend time with younger guys and helping them get caught up to speed, is great, unless their college did a killer job of teaching them. So
I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure those colleges are out there for sure.
Yeah.
I would agree. There was the practical side was missed a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know those things either. I had a pastor that took me under his wing, and he just did some very simple questions that helped me. He'd be like, hey, don't forget you have fill in the blank activity that you have to get done. Like, you got to get this done. I was like, oh yeah, I'm done, or I know what I'm going to do for that. And he's like, do you know how to do that? That he would always follow it up with, do you know That's how good. To do that? And even when I went, oh yeah, I know how to do that. He goes, okay, tell me how you do that.
Yeah.
And I would go, okay, maybe I don't know how to do that. And he would just push that one little statement further.
Yeah.
And it would make me go, you know what? I think I've just done stuff. I don't know that I actually know how to do it.
Yeah. No, that's good.
And, and just that simple little push. Over time I just started going, yeah, just tell me how do you do it? Just tell me how you do it.
Yeah.
And even if I had done it 100 times, I just started, it kind of flipped it where I started going, how do you do this? And I started getting curious about how he approached it. And it completely changed how I do funerals. I've probably done over 200 funerals at this point. I was at a church where it was an older church where I was burying a lot of people, and I had to walk through it, but learn. But I had my trial by fire moments too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's how you learn. It's how you grow, I guess.
I guess, unfortunately. Anyway, you're a pastor's kid. Dad's a pastor. Yep. Was there anything that your dad was intentional to teach you about ministry? Maybe it was just that you saw it, but was he intentional with anything specific?
Yeah, I think he was. My memory is really bad, first of all, so I discredit myself because I have such a terrible memory. But when I knew that you were going to ask me that question, because Tim is gracious and he prompts us ahead of time, I started thinking about that. I don't remember a single moment where my dad sat me down and said, hey, I want to teach you how to do this. But he absolutely led by example, right? And so I think I have a couple answers. First is that my dad taught me how to work hard in ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, before I was born, I was told that my dad was working so hard that he, meaning like running all kinds of ministries, doing just about everything. And except he wasn't the lead pastor. So he was just doing all the back stuff that we all know exists, right? Like training teachers and running programs, running events and all that kind of stuff. He was working so hard that he passed out in the stairwell and they found him. He was conscious, but he was just laying in the stairwell having passed out because he was so exhausted. Jeez. And I remember hearing that story. And, you know, if you don't know him or if you hear that story, you might go, something's wrong there. Like you should have said no to a couple things. Or like, I know it's very easy to think negatively about that, but I never did. I always thought, I literally have thought, man, I hope someday I pass out in the hallway.
My dad's so cool.
My dad's so cool. He worked so hard that he passed out in the hallway. Like I literally like thought my whole life, I've thought my whole life that was a good thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's healthy or not. You guys can judge that. But he worked hard. He worked hard. I remember another moment where he was trying to save the church some money. We needed to cut down this massive tree. I'm talking like the base of it was like 7 feet wide all the way around. And I remember my dad, this was in Florida when I was in high school. So it was hot as could be. He was out there with the chainsaw for weeks and weeks and weeks cutting this thing down. And I would look out or I would go by or I'd see him come home after work one day, just soaked to sweat, covered in saw chips and whatever, sawdust. I would just remember thinking like, man, my dad works so hard. And I remember thinking like, I want to be like that when I get older. And so he didn't intentionally sit down and say, hey, you should work hard. He showed it to me. Yeah. And then the other thing too is he was always present for all of my basketball games, right? So my older brother, who Tim knows, myself, who played on the same basketball team all through high school. And I don't ever remember my dad not being there. Not only that, but they used to put that massive camcorder, you know, with the thing that comes like to here, and they would record and they put the VHS tape in it and close it. They would record all of our games. And so I watched those games for years afterwards. and loving it because not only do you get to watch yourself play, but I would listen to my dad's commentary, and he just loved his sons and he loved watching his sons play basketball, and he supported us big time in that. So always being there for our family is something I'll never forget that he taught me in ministry, because that's so important as a pastor, but also just him working hard is something that, and that translates to more than just physical exhaustion and cutting down trees. You know, I know that that carried over into how he preached sermons and how he did ministry and how he ran churchwide events and all the things I saw him do. And that's something I've tried to emulate in my life. Like, I don't want to be someone who people question, where is he? Why is he not in the office? Why is he not? Why, you know, he never really does anything. I don't see him work very hard. Every time I go in there, his feet are up. Like, what's going on? Like, I want to be someone that's known for working hard. And I think that comes from my dad. So those are a couple things.
Yeah, and I know Dr. Tom. So I would also say, and you said it in just being there to watch your basketball games, but he, that same work ethic was in his family. I mean, from everything that I saw. So
yeah, yep. Yeah, for a while there, he was a pastor in West Des Moines.
Yeah,
and so he was actually able to come up to our faith basketball games.
Yeah.
But Tim was playing in, so.
Remember that? I went to church one Sunday with, I don't know if it was with you or your brother or whatever, but I remember going there one time. Yeah.
That small little church in West Des Moines.
Yep.
You should see that church now.
Okay.
It is surrounded by the, what is that mall that's built there, that was built there?
I have no idea.
Something Creek. I can't remember the name of it.
Stony you could Creek say Tower. Anything and we would believe you.
All right, I'll just call it Stony Creek. But there's like a massive mall with a million stores. Like, it's a mall that's like not like all together. It's disconnected, so you can go to a different store. And it's literally surrounding this tiny little church. It's the funniest thing.
It's one of the stores in the strip mall. Like, it's just added in.
They should put a little Christian bookstore in there.
Oh, man. All right. Current ministry position. So talk to us about Vox Church. Tell us kind of the model you guys use within multi-site, and give us the why behind what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so I kind of referenced it a little bit earlier, but our lead pastor grew up in New Haven. He was a teenager when he accepted Jesus, and he was one of those teenagers that he accepted Jesus and then it changed everything. It just wasn't something he did, and then later in life he figured out that he wanted to follow Jesus. He instantly started speaking, playing music, all kinds of things as a teenager, and then got some of his fellow buddies to join him. They ended up actually creating a band. And so this band, I don't even remember the name of it, but this band like started to grow in popularity, and they were actually traveling literally all over the world. They would go to Iceland, they'd go to all kinds of places to play music. And then at the end of the concert, our lead pastor, Justin Kendrick, would speak. He would like preach. And so as they were doing this, they started to like get older, and then they had a couple kids, and then they realized like, gosh, we can't live this lifestyle forever. And that's when God planted in his heart to plant a church in New England. And so with 9 people, they began to pray about planting a church in New England. And so I don't know the date of the, actually I do, it was like September 14th, 2011. They had their first church service at a bar/concert hall in downtown New Haven. It's called Toad's Place. You can look it up. And that was where they had their first service. Eventually they got another place rented called College Street Music Hall, and they started having church there. And then they began to slowly start planting other churches. And so here we are today, 13 years later, there's 11 locations. We're planting a new one in about 2 months. So there'll be 12 locations. But Justin's desire that has now spread to his staff is to see New England, this is our tagline, to see New England go from the most spiritually dead place in America to the most spiritually vibrant place on the earth. And obviously that's a huge goal, that's a huge mission, but it seems possible, and here's why. Our desire here is to plant churches in the largest cities in New England. And if we are able to, so we're trying to plant in the 10 largest cities in New England. And if we plant a Vox church in the 10 largest cities, we are in proximity with 1% of the population of New England. And that's our goal. And so the goal is to continually plant churches all across New England until we end up with, I don't know how many churches, but a lot and reaching New England. And so we know that like a church building or a church location is great, but we're also really big on community groups. That's why when I got hired as a community group person, it was kind of like, oh, this is a full-time deal. So we want to like take those people that go to those churches and plant community groups in the area. So eventually, if you looked at a map, like our goal is just kind of spread across New England and go be in every state, right? All of the states, and plant churches and reach New England. And so for me, I'm now like kind of outside of that big goal, and I'm focusing on one church, right? But our one church of about 1,200 people right now, it's our largest location. It's where our pastor preaches from every Sunday. Our goal is to plant churches every 2 years. And so we're looking now at some, you know, 20, 30 minutes away where we can plant. And the idea is to keep reaching people. I'll just tell you, like last year, last fall, we planted two churches, one in New Britain, which is such a New England name, and one in Clinton. And both of those churches are doing great. Like they're thriving because people are in New England. People are searching. You come in and it's like, oh, I actually like being here. And then you hear the gospel preached. It's a pretty powerful experience. And so I think that's why we're seeing that kind of growth. So that's the model of the church. It's something I was not used to. I never even heard of that before. But having been here now almost four years, I've drank the Kool-Aid. Like I bought in. And now I have this really strong desire to see New England transformed. Like, where did that come from? I'm an Iowa boy.
Yeah.
But the model of our church, like that's our mission. That's our vision. And it's pretty inspiring to be a part of something like that. So
I'll ask you the question that I do get asked quite a bit. Okay. What does a campus pastor do?
And if you asked that question yesterday, believe it or not, and it was a bunch of students that asked me that. And I said, I play solitaire and drink Coke and hang out with you guys. That's what I do.
I mean, all I have to do is hit play on Sunday. That's about it. You know,
they literally were like, oh, and I could see in their minds, they're like, I should probably be a pastor because this sounds crazy. I should probably find those guys and follow up and give them the truth. But a little for a while.
That's hilarious.
So the best way I can describe it is in a church of our size of 1,200 people, you can't pastor that many people. No one person can. And so the way that it was drawn to me is, and this is why I said yes, because it was drawn in three circles. So the first circle, the inner circle, would be like I talked about leader development. And for me, especially in that small circle includes my staff. I have 8 staff that work for the church in Brantford. And so I oversee those guys. And so I spend a ton of time with them, check-ins every single week, game planning, vision planning, talking about the ins and outs of their ministry, because they're extensions of me, right? So like they're extensions of a campus pastor, and they're reaching a ton of people themselves. So we're already tackling a big number of people through our staff. Then the next circle is like, these are like your community group leaders. They're the ones that are shepherding a bunch of people in your church. Yeah. So kind of a level of leadership, not the highest level, but like definitely an important level of leadership. And that encompasses probably another 100 people. And then there's the third ring. And this ring is the people that you say hello to on Sunday morning. You go grab a coffee if you can, if you have time. You inquire about them growing in their faith. We do have what we call a discipleship pathway. And so we're trying to get people through that. And so we're all working, the 200 I just described are kind of working to get these people through the discipleship pathway. But you don't spend all of your time on them. You really do focus on those first two rings. When they told me that, it was like, oh, okay. All right, yes, I'll do this. Because at first I'm like, I'm never going to see my family. Like, how do you even pastor 1,200 people? But Vox is very good at saying to us on staff, like, family is most important. God first, family second, church last. And so I don't ever put, I try not to put church ahead of my family. I'm always there for my son's soccer games. I'm always there for his basketball games. I'm always there for the family events and stuff that we have going on. And I say no a lot. I have to, because I got to make sure my focus is where it should be. And I don't tell anybody that, right? Like, I'm not like, oh, you're not in the two rings, so I don't have time for you. It's not like that at all. But in my mind, I'm going, okay, what's the best use? I only have 40 hours of work a week, right? Like, obviously, if you're a pastor, it's way more than that. But I'm trying to like get my mind to keep thinking that way so that I keep saying no to the right person. Of course, you know, I hate doing that. I'm a yes man. Like I'll say, yeah, my wife, she's the one that helps me keep my time better because I'll say yes to everything. And so, but that's how you do it. Like that's what I'm doing now. And I'm learning how to manage that a lot better. Cause at first, I think those first 4 months of me in this role, I was just meeting with everyone at any time and trying to figure it out. Not everyone. I mean like guys, of course, but yeah, not understanding yet how to say no the right way. And again, I talked earlier about developing leaders. This is why you have to develop leaders to be effective. And it doesn't matter if you're in a 1200 person church or 200 person church, you can't pastor 200 people. You have to invest in people who will invest in people. And so that takes a lot of, again, read, because that's where some of the growth happens on how to do that effectively.
Yeah. I've often used the illustration of a hub and then the spokes around it. And as you are definitely a hub in your church, like it's critical. But the spokes that come off of you are going to be different than the spokes that need to come off a different hub within the church. And yeah. Every wheel can only have so many spokes before you're just like, that wheel looks ridiculous. It's got like stuff coming out everywhere. So you gotta stick to the people you're supposed to stick to.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. What are two or three characteristics that you would encourage other second chair leaders to look for in a senior pastor?
Yeah, this is good. I love that question. I can tell you this, that we focus on character first. Yep. So that's our first and foremost quality that we look for when hiring. And so, you know, I think about people who are really gifted. They're usually gifted in one of two areas, people/admin, right? Like there are people that are really, really good at both. I think our lead pastor is one of them. He's really good with people, really good at admin stuff, but typically you find that you're good at one or the other. And so in either scenario, doesn't matter. Like character is first. So we would definitely encourage, and we just, you know, I just interviewed a guy last week and I'm hiring him as our outreach director. Character mattered to me big time. And so his character is flawless. And it's like, yeah, you may not be told, like my campus pastor said, do you think he's passionate about outreach? And I said, I don't care. Because his character is there and I want to work with him. And so, yeah, so I would say like research the person's past, talk to people they've served with, hire on character first. Like, and I think that's how I got the job. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I knew nothing about small group ministry and yet they still hired me. And it's because my boss at that time ended up calling my references. And I think that they hired me on character, which is really great. You know, I'm really, really grateful for that. So character, and then I would say calling. Can he articulate the calling of God over his life and do others verify it, right? Like, why does he want to work for the church? Why is he even wanting this position? You know, what does he or she want to be known for at the end of their life? Yeah. That's the calling.
I want to drill down a little bit there because I'm seeing that too. When you have an exciting church where God is doing exciting things, you will get people that just want to be around the excitement.
Yeah.
And they may not have taken a pause moment to go, like, do I just want to feel like I'm at Christian youth camp every day, or do I actually want to be in ministry? Yeah.
Right. So character, calling, and then competency. They're all C's. I didn't do that on purpose. This is literally what our church uses. So can he do the job that's required? Does he have the gifts? Does he have the abilities? Does he have the history to be able to do church ministry? And one of the things that we like to do when we're interviewing is we throw out scenarios and just see how they respond. And sometimes it's like, gosh, you crushed it. That's exactly what we would do. And then other times it's like, oh gosh, we have a lot of work to do with you, but your character is there. Yeah. Your calling is there and we're willing to work with you. And the last one would be chemistry. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think you can work with this person? You know, I won't say any names again, but there was a pastor that got hired and I got to sit in on some interviews with him prior to him being hired. Not in this church, by the way, not at Box Church. This is a previous church. And it was weird. It was awkward. And I didn't really speak up about that. He ended up getting hired and it was not fun to work with that person. And so chemistry is important. So if you're a lead pastor, you're trying to hire someone, or if you're a campus pastor trying to hire someone, I think chemistry with that person is really important. You're going to see them day in and day out every day. And if in your first couple meetings with them, they were annoying. They were hard to be around. Chemistry is really important. Arrogant. Yeah. All those signs. So character, calling, competency, and chemistry.
Yeah. And I'll throw in a C of my own. Avoid charisma only.
Ah, yes. Yep. That's really good. A lot of people have that. You're right.
Yeah. You can fall in love with somebody that you're seeing because you see the charisma oozing out of them. And that's the people side that you talked about. But they really have nothing other than that. Like, so when you get to the character and you get to the competency, they fake it until they make it because they're good with people.
Right.
And so when you only see charisma, start running. So.
Yeah. And that's why it's important. You asked me, like, what's the first step? The first step is to really get to know them a lot more, spend a lot more time with them. I mean, like, literally, if someone has potential for ministry, or at least you think they do, spend time with them. That's what Jesus did with his disciples. He spent his whole life, not his whole life, he spent his whole time, 24 hours a day with these guys, and knew that they were being called to something greater. And so, yeah, that's really good. There's another C we can add to the list.
We do this at our church too. We actually have one more, and it's care. We look for people that just have a natural tendency to care like others don't.
Yeah.
So whether it's hospitality or whether it's just like they're writing the thank yous, or they're doing the hospital things, or they're making the meals, where you just kind of, it's things that you don't always see that are happening.
Yeah.
You kind of have to look for them a little bit more nuanced, but we value care as well. So
Do you guys hire people typically that are in your church, or do you like look for outside people who apply?
Dude, we're in a season where I don't know that there are a lot of people outside of name your church.
Yeah, it's true.
So I will say this. We have hired, so Seth has been our lead pastor in April 1st, 2021. He still says it's the cruelest April Fool's joke anybody's ever given it, is that we hired him.
Oh my goodness.
So April 1st, 2021. So that's what, 3 years we've hired. Of our 20-ish staff, we've hired probably, man, I'm going to guess 10. That's a guess. Almost all of them. I'm thinking to make sure. I think maybe even all of them, except for one, is Gen Z.
Wow, yeah.
So very young. All of them were under 25. On my campus, we just hired a worship leader, and she was 20. She's doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
But very green. And so we have high, all of them were from within too. Let me think through that. Nope. One was not. Actually, sorry. Two were not Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's the other guy that I was thinking of. He is younger, but he's not Gen Z. We did hire him from outside, but I think everybody else was within our church. So very much within our church, very young. And so we've had to take this mindset of, you've got to develop them. You have to pour into them. You have to teach them how to do it. You got to understand they're going to make rookie dumb mistakes just because they don't know what they're doing. And there's another moment that always happens, I feel like, with young green staff, and maybe this would be true for you. There is a moment, it's that church camp moment, I think, where there's a moment where, like, you've done the character, you've done the calling, you've done everything, you've done all your due diligence, you hire them, they hit the ground running, they're doing fine, but then they have a moment where they realize, oh, this isn't a game. Like, this is actually people's lives, and it actually, like, they actually care about what I just did.
Yeah.
And I think there's always that moment. And so they'll have those moments where it's like, in a way, it's a come to Jesus moment, but it's like they realize that, oh, me saying that, it's not a joke anymore. I could say that before maybe, and it's a joke. It's not anymore. Yeah. It's serious now.
Yeah. That's awesome. Plus they also have you or other staff above them that are a little bit older that they can also fall back on, right? Like in those moments of, oh crap, look what I just did, or I just made a big mistake. There you are and that's something that I didn't have, I don't think, as much as I wanted in my previous churches. And I definitely have that now. And it's night and day different. But now I find myself being that older guy.
Yeah, well, we are, man. That's just the reality. We've both of us got like 20 years. We're the experienced old men. But in that too, I think another thing that happens in just being there is I will often go, I know you feel like this is a 10 out of 10 urgency or mistake, or like you're feeling like this is a 10. I need you to hear this. This is like a 2. It's okay. Like this is a 2. We're going to navigate this. We can smooth this over. We can correct this. We can, nobody's even going to care that you made that kind of mistake. Like, let's just move forward. It's a 2. And so I can do that too. Sometimes they're like, if this is a 2, what does a 10 feel like?
And I was like,
I'm like, you'll grow and you'll learn that it's okay. And so, but you have to remind them sometimes, like, this isn't as big as you think it is, but I'm glad that you're feeling the weight of this moment.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Yeah, I think too, when a church is smaller, those mistakes seem bigger because everybody knows, everybody saw it, whatever it is. Or maybe like you offended someone who's like actually pretty important to the church. In a bigger church like ours, and again, like this, there's no like whatsoever patting on the back about being a bigger church. It comes with a lot of challenges.
You're just speaking truth.
But your mistakes that you make, they're a lot smaller typically than in a smaller church. And I've been in both big time.
Well, in a church like yours with 100 staff and stuff, they could be like, "Did you hear what Sally said?" It's like, "Who's Sally?"
Yeah,
I don't even know who Sally is.
I know. No, literally, I'll be sitting at staff meetings and I'll look over and be like, "Who's that?" And little did I know that they had gotten hired a month ago. Like, whatever, it's fine.
Yep.
Yeah,
it does happen.
How it goes. So,
well, cool. All right. What encouragement would you give to a pastor or a ministry leader out there that is, they're just in a tough season? Like they're navigating it. They're in it. They like, maybe they made the mistake or maybe people are just beating them up for absolutely no reason. What encouragement could you give them?
Yeah, man, I've been there. That is not easy. I would just say 2 things. I would say, number one, just continue to be faithful. You're not serving people. You're serving the Lord at the end of the day. And so he calls us to faithful ministry. And we've got plenty of Bible examples that we can look at. People who were persecuted, who were treated terribly. I mean, Joseph's my absolute favorite Bible character, just because some people think maybe he had pride as a sin, but I don't see any sin there. And so like, I look at him and go, man, if he can be faithful in prison, then I can be faithful in my cold office. I'm literally wearing a sweatshirt because it's like so air conditioned in here that it's cold and I'm in the middle of July. But like if I can, if I'm dealing with this and he was in, like, I can do this. So I'm going to be faithful no matter what. Doesn't matter what necessarily what people think about you. It matters what the Lord thinks about you. And you're a son, you're forgiven, you're loved, you're all those things. So just be faithful, And then just trust that God is going to either work it out or he's going to move you. And I've done both. I've been in both scenarios, and moving across the country, 20 hours away from Iowa to Simsbury, Connecticut. Like I live in North Haven now, but like I moved up north to Simsbury with no job, no house, no income, on a little like a rope of faith. That's all I was walking on. And God brought me here, and I've never been more fulfilled, never been more happy, but it was the hardest thing I've ever walked through. And so I think I can look back and say that I was faithful through it, and that I trusted God through it, and he delivered, and he always does, and he always will. And it most of the time isn't what you expected. I thought for sure I would be a campus pastor in New Hampshire at a church called Next Level Church. That's what I got hired for. And look where I am today. I'm a campus pastor at Vox Church. I had no idea, never heard of it before. And yet because of our faithfulness as a family, because of constant trust, he delivered. And so it's really hard. Like it's easy now to say that because like everything's great. In the middle of it, it completely stinks. And so, you know, to hear someone say, oh, just be faithful and trust. Like that's not always easy to hear. But at the end of the day, that's still the answer. It's still the truth. And so, yeah, that would be my encouragement for someone who's walking through really hard times. And if you're literally walking through something, so faithful and trust, but if you're walking through something where people are hammering you and talking bad about you, whatever, you really need some good people around you. Get some good people around you who will speak life into you. Maybe a mentor who has walked through some of the, you know what? Call Tim. Tim can walk you through anything. I'm sure he's been through everything. And so, yeah.
Thanks, Jake.
Yeah, get some good people around you. Laugh, you know, have a barbecue. Like, it's probably a two. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Cool. I'll share. So I read a book. I was in a very difficult season.
Yeah.
And I read a book by Chuck Swindoll called Church Awakening. Mm. And in the book, I remember little bits and pieces of the book, but there was one aspect of the book and it was my takeaway from the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he was in a 1200 person church. I think it was in Texas. And he was just miserable. He's like, man, I think I'm just done. I think I'm supposed to just resign. Like, I think I'm just done. It's over. And yeah. His wife was like, are you talking about the 12 people that are upset with you right now? 12 yeah. out of 1200.
Yeah.
She's just like, go spend some time in prayer, go to bed, wake up and do your job. He was like, okay.
Nice. That's awesome.
And I was like, I kind of needed that in the moment that I was in, where I was just like super discouraged and just like, everybody hates me. I'm terrible at this. It's over. And it was almost like his wife was speaking to me, where it's like, would you just go spend some time in prayer, go to bed and get up and just do your job. Like, quit whining about this.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That is she from New England? Cause that is how they talk out here.
I have no idea. I love all of Chuck Swindoll's books. We talked about a few of them.
Did you know my parents went to Chuck Swindoll's church for a little bit?
No. Frisco, yeah.
Yeah. They've got a picture with them and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were there for a couple of years. They really liked it.
Yeah, they should. I love him. I love everything he's written. So
totally. Totally.
Anyway, cool. Dude, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it. It's a lot of good stuff.
Man. It's nice to reconnect with you. And what you've got going on at Metro Community sounds incredible. Sounds awesome. So
thanks, dude.
Glad to partner with you in this way. Appreciate you.
All right, man. See ya.
Take care. Bye.
I don't think I was lying. I think you could sense that we absolutely love talking to each other, talking about ministry with one another. Make sure you check Vox Church out. If you're in the New England area, it is a great church. Go check it out. Everything that I hear from those guys is just a pretty incredible thing. So it is worth checking out. If you're not, hey, maybe check him out online. I don't know. But Jake's a great guy. Hope you're encouraged by him. Hope you got some insight from him. And we are looking forward to our next episode. Got a pastor from Michigan. Looking forward to that one. Hope to see you next time. And as we get out of here, as always, if you would like, subscribe, comment, interact, engage. It does help the channel. It does help people find us. Love you to do that. But otherwise, I'll see you next time.